Welcome into the install with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. It is divisional week for the Tennessee Titans, number one seed in the AFC, hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. Greg, we got a football game.
We do indeed. A home playoff game for the number one seed in the AFC, which that didn't seem like that was going to be the case a number of weeks ago, to say the number one seed in the AFC.
No, I did not think, sitting in the press box in Pittsburgh, watching them kind of stumble around against Ben Roethlisberger and losing that game, that they would still find a way to scrounge this thing out. But they've certainly done it. And as we sit here taping this on a Wednesday afternoon, Derrick Henry is going to play. He spoke to the media today. So I think that's the place that we have to start. Greg,
we do have to start there, because basically we know what the – let me answer it this way. This is a team with a clearly defined identity on both sides of the ball. I think they know what they are, they know who they are, and they know the way they want to play and have to play to be successful. And the question is, does the playoff game play out that way so they can stick to what they are? And since you mentioned Henry, we know Henry will be back. He's not going to be back to get six carries, Buck. He's going to be the foundation of what they do offensively. You know, maybe he sits out a series here and there, but it's not as if he's going to be a spot player. So the offense will run through Henry. The question becomes, will it run through Henry, and what will be the personnel packages with Henry as the eye back? Because he's an eye back. He's not a shotgun back. He's an eye back. So will they go with two tight ends, three tight ends, fullback? Will they go with 11 personnel? How will they feel the Bengals are most susceptible to the run game? Because the Bengals, ultimately, when they tend to play against base offensive personnel, what the Bengals have done a good part of this year, not all the time, but a good part of this year, will line up with what's essentially a 5-2 front. Five defensive linemen across, which widens the front, and two stacked linebackers in Logan Wilson and Jermaine Pratt, who are both good players, by the way. So will they do that? Last week was interesting, because against the Raiders, when the Raiders went with their base offense, and the Raiders do a lot of base offense, for the most part, the Bengals played in nickel with Mike Hilton, the slot corner. He's a very good slot corner, but he's about 5'9 and 180 pounds. Right, and I would be surprised if that's the way they chose to play against Derrick Henry and the base offense run game. I think you need big people, and I think you'll see that five-man front with two stacked linebackers.
And unfortunately for Cincinnati, Larry Ogunjobi is not going to play in this game.
That's a big loss, because he's a really stout interior run defender.
Yeah, we'll see what the status of Trey Hendrickson is as well, who missed the rest of that game with a concussion, but was back at practice yesterday.
Right. It's my understanding from speaking to someone today that it's trending upward for sure.
Yeah.
So, again, we don't know till he's cleared through the protocol, but it's trending upward.
So, Greg, the Bengals, just generally, I think to start on offense from the standpoint of Joe Burrow and that fantastic collection of skill position players, we've talked about them before and how Burrow operates under pressure. The way that the Raiders really focused on trying to suffocate the run with Joe Mixon, and Bengals are going to get their yardage either way with all of those great guys, whether it be Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, or C.J. Uzomah. What I guess did you see from the Bengals in that game on offense between 20-20? And then what kind of changed for them in the red zone? Because they kind of stalled out a little bit.
Just a little. I mean, they still scored two touchdowns, but let's look at it this way. Since the regular season game against the Raiders, where Mixon had, I think, 29 carries for maybe 125 yards, give or take, they've not really run the ball well. Now, they run the ball with volume. The run game is part of their offense. They're not – everybody obviously focuses with reason on Burrow and the receivers, but the run game is a meaningful part. I mean, obviously, Derrick Henry got hurt, and he would have been the number one guy in the league in this particular category that I'm going to mention. But Mixon has had the most first down carries as an eye back, meaning the quarterback is under center.
Yeah.
So they want to run the ball with Mixon as an eye back. They just haven't done it really well since that Raiders regular season game. So everybody now focuses on the pass game. And obviously they have weapons. And actually the tight end, Uzama, is pretty good too.
Right.
But they have weapons. And I think ultimately that's where the rubber will meet the road in this game. I don't expect the Bengals to run the ball with high production. I think as long as the game's close, they will run it with volume, but I would not expect there to be high production. You know, Mixon's had a lot of 18 for 57 games, those kinds of games. I would expect that same kind of thing against the Titans. But now you get into where I think the rubber does meet the road in this matchup, and that's the front four of the Titans, particularly their nickel front four where Autry comes inside against the O-line for the Bengals. And that's where I think Tennessee has a distinct advantage. Now, Burrow is a fascinating player because Burrow has a really refined sense of timing and rhythm, but there's also snaps in which he does stay in the pocket and he gets sacked a lot because he is also a quarterback that believes he can make every throw. He's a very aggressive mindset thrower. And he believes, hey, if I just wait that extra half second, the throw is going to be there. So it's a very interesting mix. But Burrow is a really good player. He manages the pocket well. He navigates the pocket well. He's got mobility to get outside the pocket. As I said, he's aggressive. So he will throw vertical balls, even if the corners are off. And I'm sure you're going to get the matchup. We know what the Titans do. They play sides. Fulton is the right corner. Jenkins is the left corner. So Fulton and his close buddy, Ja'Marr Chase, who I believe they went to high school together as well as LSU.
Correct.
So they know each other pretty well. They're going to have some matchups in this game. But, you know, that's where I think the matchup is somewhat difficult for the Bengals because their O-line is not a particularly good pass protecting O-line.
And it's important to note that Elijah Molden is going to play in this game. He's been a full participant in practice all week long. And I know that Tyler Boyd was going to eat if Elijah Molden wasn't able to go in this game. Danny Amendola, the ghost of Danny Amendola, gave Chris Jackson the business week 18 in Houston. But you bring up CJ Uzomah, Greg, and I wonder what you've made watching the Titans defense of Dane Cruikshank and how they deploy him on tight ends. He's had success against Travis Kelce. He's had success against George Kittle, against Mike Gesicki. And that seems like while they do have a bunch of talented skill position players, that there are places where the Titans can match up well on the back end.
Well, he plays when they go to dime, which is predominantly third down, and then other selected situations, whatever they may be, could be at the end of a half, could be second and 14. But for the most part, he comes in on third down when they go to dime, because they're not really a dime defense overall. They play dime, as I said, third down and selected situations. And they've shown that they will play man coverage when they're in dime, and Cruikshank is the tight end matchup. So I would imagine you would see that. I don't believe it. Uzama is a good player. I don't think they'll see him as the player that they need to stop, though, in order to win the game. Sure. You know, obviously, you've got Chase. Higgins only had one catch last week. He'll have more this week. Boyd is a tough matchup inside. The question becomes, how much man coverage do they play, or do they play more zone? Because their defensive profile, pretty much the large part of the season, Buck, and you know this, particularly when they're in their sub defenses, whether it be nickel or dime, has been we rush four and we play coverage behind it. And they're pretty multiple with their coverages. They're not a team like the Cowboys, for instance, where, you know, hey, you're going to get man coverage. Yeah. They play a bunch of different coverages. And, you know, obviously they call them based on given situations, given field location, you know, all kinds of reasons, which we don't know because we're not in the meeting rooms. But they're not a one coverage defense. So, you know, ultimately, I think that's the secondary matchups will be really important in this game. Just as I mentioned, the pass rush for the Titans will be really important, but they're still going to have to match up in the secondary one way or the other. And there's three really good wide receivers they're going to have to match up to.
So we've talked about the Titans offense, and it will go through Derrick Henry, assuming that this is a normal Derrick Henry game.
Right.
And we saw Ryan Tannehill really elevate is not the right word, but really perform at a high level against the Houston Texans when last we saw this football team play. Explosive passing plays down the field, something that have been a rare enough thing for Tennessee throughout the course of the year. But with the matchups against the Bengals defense, Greg, outside of the front, how does Tennessee offensively with their skill position players match up against this Bengals defense?
I think pretty well. I mean, I'm assuming everybody's healthy, right? Jones is
even good. Julio.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that the matchup they'll look at is Eli Apple. Mm-hmm. I think Awuzie is a solid NFL corner, and Awuzie at times this year, they have matched up against who they deem to be number one wideouts of an opponent. I'm not sure who they'd feel. I would think they might feel that's AJ Brown, but they might not even match up. They might just play sides.
Right.
So the matchup you would look for, I think, would be Eli Apple. I think you'll see their play action pass game, you know, be a major part of what they do, because with Henry back, you know, they'll feel that they can manipulate second level defenders, because a lot of their play action pass game, it's either that bang play action, or a lot of it has the look of boot, but it's not really boot, but it has an impact. They did this against, I remember, Buffalo. There was a great play where they did it, and it just, second level defenders have boot rules, and it starts to look like boot, but it's not. So I think that what really stood out to me about Tannehill in the Houston game was the aggressiveness with which he delivered the football. Like, I felt like he got into a nice groove of, hey, these are throws I have to make, and I'm just going to turn it loose.
Yeah, it was interesting to see, you know, because he rattled off three touchdown passes, three straight touchdown drives. Yeah. In that second quarter, things kind of stalled out with three consecutive three and outs to start the second half. And then, that spectacular third and five scramble drill, rolling to his right and hitting Nick Westbrook-Ikhina to extend that drive and get Julio Jones in the end zone on that 8-play 75-yard drive, was as confident as I've seen him look outside of the Thursday night football game against the 49ers.
Well, just
really all season long.
Yeah, I mean, just to the seam throws to Firkser against cover two. There's not a lot of space there. Those are timing rhythm throws, and you've got to be aggressive. You've got to turn it loose. You can't wait to see, is that throw there? Because if you wait to see if that's throw there, the safeties converge. You know, Tannehill, look, the San Francisco game, the Houston game, Tannehill was very aggressive. They were really good on third down, really good on third down in both those games. With Henry back, assuming it's sort of their normal offense that, you know, we came to expect before Henry got hurt and missed all those games, there's going to be opportunities to throw the ball. We'll see what their offensive approach is. I think they would want to throw the ball some on first down against the Bengals base defense. I really do.
Yeah. And that's been an interesting thing to kind of watch with Todd Downing, how rarely he does throw the ball on first down throughout the course of the season. Now, Greg, I want to kind of go back to something that you brought up earlier when you're talking about boot concepts that the Titans run, or concepts that look like they might be boot, but have different variations. When you bring up boot rules for defenses, and I know each team probably has specific ones, but just generally, what can you kind of flesh that out a little bit for the audience?
Well, what happens a lot, almost always, when you boot, let's say you're booting to the right. So it's, you fake a handoff and the quarterback, you know, moves to his right, boots out to the right. Almost always you get a crossing route from the backside that's working with the quarterback. So you get a crossing route going to the same side that the quarterback is booting. Mm-hmm. So what happens a lot with second level defenders, linebackers, if it's a safety down there, is even if they step up, you know, a couple of steps to play the run, what they immediately do is they turn around and they look for that crosser, because that's how they're taught. Those are boot rules.
Right.
They look for the crosser. But if it's not really boot, you don't always get a crosser. So what happens is linebackers hunt up something that ends up not being there, and there's different routes, and they're not in position to play other routes. So, you know, when you're a team that features the zone run game, which the Titans do, that's their foundation with Derrick Henry, clearly, is you can manipulate second level defenders with what it looks like, you know, what Tannehill looks like off the run action.
Yeah. Now we talk about it with Coach Mac all right. the time. You're just trying to put those defenders in conflict situations, and that seems to be a great way to do it.
You're trying to play with their responsibilities. It's you're trying to play with their eyes. You grab their eyes, and then they start to be somewhat in recovery mode, and then they have rules, and you're trying to play with their rules.
So on the other side of the bracket, or at least in the AFC, Greg, the Chiefs and the Bills, going to be an interesting game. Josh Allen was spectacular against the Patriots.
Yeah, we've never seen seven possessions, seven touchdowns before. So I guess that was pretty good.
This man, Greg, I watched that game back twice, and I could not believe he's just such an impressive, highly talented player. And we've talked about the variance with him throughout the course of his career and how it's, you know, it seems like it's starting to level off at this point. But against this Chiefs defense, the Bills, I struggle to find a way where they wouldn't have the advantage on that side of the ball.
Well, a couple of points. Number one, as I've said before, Allen's the most purely physically gifted quarterback in the league.
Spectacular.
But they're also, and they've tried to get away from this a little bit because it's hard to play this way every week. But for the most part this year, they've been the most quarterback centric team in the league. They basically asked Josh to be great every week. Now, over the last three, four games, they've tried to run the ball with a little more volume. They've had some success. So we'll see if they stay with that. Certainly, the Josh Allen designed run game will be a factor. They do that every week situationally, third and short, red zone. You have to be prepared to defend that. That's a meaningful part of what they do. And they almost always show it on the first series, too. So, you know, they pretty much tell you, hey, you got to be aware of Josh running the football. And I'm talking by design, not scrambles.
Right.
And he can scramble, too, as you all know. When you play the Chiefs and the Steve Spagnuolo defense, you know you're going to get certain things. You know you're going to get a lot of cover one, man coverage with a single high safety. You know you're going to get cover two, which is a zone concept with two half field safeties. And Tyrann Mathieu was almost always the middle hole player in the middle of cover two. And one thing they do really well, the Chiefs, is they disguise and get to that with late movement. So you don't necessarily know it's cover two before the snap of the ball. And then no team in the NFL has had more snaps of cover zero than the Chiefs. And they do that very situationally, obviously, because no team just plays cover zero where they blitz everybody, you know, a high percentage of the time. But that's something you have to be aware of situationally. Obviously, these teams played week five, and the Bills put up a lot of points. And I believe Allen had 15 completions for about 320 yards. There were a number of big pass plays in that game.
Yeah, a much different version, or at least the Chiefs defense playing not quite to their standard at that point.
No, not at that point. They played a lot better. So we'll see what when you play the Chiefs, look, we know the Bills defense, if you just look at the numbers, has been really good this year.
Yeah.
But I still think when you play the Chiefs, you have to go into the game figuring that you have to score. I don't think you go into a game against the Chiefs as much as you feel good about your defense and all that good stuff, Buck. I don't think you go into a game against the Chiefs thinking we're going to win 2017. I think you go into a game with the Chiefs feeling like we got to put up 28 plus.
Yeah, and it can't just be TJ Watt recovering a fumble for a touchdown, unfortunately.
No, well,
for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
For the Chiefs on offense, Greg, it did take them a couple of possessions to get things going. Yeah. But once they did, man, we talked about how they've kind of evolved a little bit throughout the course of the season last week. And really, the way that they've gotten Jerick McKinnon involved, he's such a great addition to them. And I wonder, and we obviously don't know this because we're not in those meeting rooms, but I wonder if they know they have a guy like that, why they were so married to Clyde Edwards-Helaire throughout the course of the season. But I wonder what you made of that part of their offense last week.
You know, Edwards-Helaire, obviously they drafted him in the first round the year before. Some say, oh, that was a luxury pick. They didn't need him. But, you know, Edwards-Helaire is a back who fits what Andy Reid wants to do.
Sure.
But there's no question with him being out, McKinnon looked really quick and explosive and dynamic this past week, both as a runner and as a receiver. And I don't know what Edwards-Helaire's status is, but McKinnon fits what they do because the Chiefs are not a running team. They're a pass-first team.
Right.
They'll run here and there. I mean, McKinnon did have 12 carries. But that's really kind of what their run game is. They're not really, with rare exceptions, will they have a back, you know, with 17, 18, 19 carries. You know, if a game plays out that way, if by chance they're all of a sudden up in this game for whatever reason in the middle of the third quarter and they're up 31-10, yeah, they'll probably hand the ball off. But for the most part, their approach is not – to give volume carries to a running back. But McKinnon's always been a really good receiver going back to his days in Minnesota. And, you know, he fits what they do. And he really looked quick this past week.
Yeah, the volume carries are a lot easier to do without when you've got Patrick Mahomes playing much more efficient football,
yes.
Basically just taking what the defense is giving him.
And then his, you know, it's funny. I was watching that tape. And there were a couple of times he moved when he didn't have to. But I think that's just in his DNA. I mean, I think he's just one of those guys. If he feels it, it's a feel. You know, obviously true pocket quarterbacks, they don't have that feel. They're different. They grew up playing the position differently. You know, Mahomes, I think it's just a feel with him. Even if there's not really pressure, he'll move. I mean, the touchdown he threw to Kelsey at the end of the first half, which was really the backbreaker, the 48-yarder.
Yeah.
There was no pressure on him, and yet he moved to his right. And the same throw could have been made with him staying in the pocket, but he moved to his right, you know, 3-4 steps, and he made the throw, and he put it right on the money. You know, that's just in his DNA. I'm not sure you can coach that out of him.
And, you know, there's only so much you want to coach out of him.
Correct.
How instinctual.
You probably don't want to, you know, it's definitely a fine line, but that's who he is, and he's pretty darn good, so you probably leave that alone.
Now, Greg, from a coaching standpoint and from a game planning standpoint, I thought it was interesting because the Chiefs clearly had that game in hand and Andy Reid was still doing things like having Travis Kelce throw touchdown passes to, I think it was Pringle, the receiver that he hit in the end zone. And Greg, you talk to a lot of coaches. I wonder how, because my thought process in real time is like, why is Andy doing this when the game is clearly in hand? But after I had a minute to think about it, it's almost like they're just putting that out on film for Buffalo or whomever they would see to have to game plan for throughout the course of the week.
Yeah, I mean, this is the NFL. You know, this is, you know, we're not babying anybody here. You know, we're trying to win a Super Bowl.
Sure.
And you do what you believe is necessary. You know, it's just like what the Bills did against the Patriots. You know, a lot of people thought, oh, Sean McDermott didn't need to do that when he threw the big man touchdown pass, you know, late in the game. But you know what? Now when you play the Bills, if they get inside the 5-yard line, you get, as a defense, you have to think they could throw a big man touchdown pass here. So, I mean, it's just something for people, defenses now to be aware of and have to game plan for. And that's why teams do this stuff, because the more you can show, the more a defense has to prepare for.
Yeah. So the NFC, and we'll wrap up with these two games, the Niners at the Packers and a rematch of Rams-Bucks that the Rams won pretty handily earlier in the season. Greg, we don't have to get into too much detail on both of these games, Greg, because I know that you guys are going to cover everything at great length
on
the matchup show this week. I'm sure the preparation has been exhaustive, but just kind of, you know, like we did last week, one film thought on each of these games from your standpoint.
Well, you know, I think a couple of things. Just these are things I think you could see based on my film study.
Sure.
I think you're going to see the Rams spread it out in their offense because the Bucs are the highest percentage blitz defense in the NFL. And in that week three matchup, was it week three?
It was early on in the season, yeah, if not week three, the week first three. Month.
Yeah. In that week three matchup, see, the Rams lined up in empty sets more than any team in the NFL. That's something Sean McVay likes. It's really something that Matthew Stafford likes. And very often that minimizes pressure. And when they lined up in empty sets something like 15 times in that first matchup, And the Bucks only blitzed those empty sets one time. So it would not surprise me to see some spread formations by the Rams to try to minimize the pressure concepts of the Bucks, because ultimately when you play the Bucks, you feel you're going to get pressure, because that's what Todd Bowles does, more so than any coach in the league. So you have to defeat pressure one way or the other. You have to defeat it if it actually happens, or try to defeat it tactically by limiting how much it happens. Yeah, so that would be my thought for that game on that side of the ball.
The Niners just have so many fun playmakers that they can get involved in their offense. And Garoppolo, that intercept he had, basically it felt like three plays that you just can't make in that game.
Otherwise, yeah, the interception was a tough one, because he moved to his right. There was no one there. You can't make a throw like that. I mean, you can't miss it. The receiver was wide open. You can't miss it like that. But, you know, we know what the Niners are. Their run game is fascinating, because it's not as if they have 10 run plays, Buck. They have two or three run plays. It's how they get to them. They get to them with different formations. They use motion more than any team in the league. And they actually use motion more to run the ball than they do to throw it, because motion changes run support. Coach Mack would know all this. Changes run support. It changes gap responsibilities. You know, sometimes second level players start bumping over and it changes their gap responsibilities. So, you know, it causes changes on the move in your defense. And defenses don't like to have to make adjustments on the move like that. Because, you know, if one guy makes a mistake, then you're stuck. So, you know, they're not going to do anything different than they normally do. So I think we know how they're going to play. That, you know, and their front four is really good. They go very deep with their front four. We'll find out about Nick Bosa. You know, he's obviously got a concussion. The hope, of course, is he'll play. If he plays, I mean, their front four over the last 6 weeks of the season has been a dominant group, and they've got a lot of depth. They go 7-8 deep in that group.
Yeah, and pressure was certainly a big factor against Aaron Rodgers when the Bucks got after him in that NFC title game last season. Greg, I'm excited for divisional weekend. I know the atmosphere here in Nashville is going to be rocking.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be awesome.
I don't know if in the midst of the pandemic is the time to be throwing a party, but there will be a party in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, you know, I think right or wrong, we're making no judgments here, Buck, but I think just a lot of people are living life now, and I imagine that's going to be the case in Nashville this weekend.
Most certainly. We'll see how the results play out. Greg, the matchup show, I assume a couple of shows on Saturday morning.
Well, unfortunately, I don't set the times. We only have one show. ESPN's only giving us one show Saturday morning at 6:30 a.m., but we're on ESPN Plus. We're on demand. I mean, there's ways to watch the matchup show. But yes, you'd like to watch it before the Saturday first game Saturday, which I believe is, I don't
3:30.
Know.
3:30 Central time.
Yeah. 4:30 then Eastern time. I lose track of this stuff, you know, but yeah, so, you know, you can DVR it. It does air. You can see it on ESPN Plus. You can see it on demand. I mean, there's ways to see it, and there's some really good pieces this week, if I do say so.
I would take Greg at his word on that. Make sure you DVR the NFL matchup show or catch it live on Saturday morning. Greg, always a pleasure, my friend, and enjoy the football this weekend.
You too, Buck. Thanks.